I would like to start by saying that this section is to do with religion and state relations, supposedly to be country case studies. We will have four speakers, and we'll give each speaker 15 minutes to present the paper. After that, we'll have about 10 to 15 minutes of questions and answers session. So may I call upon the first speaker, Peter Kofi, to give his presentation on the South African state and religions in South Africa. Before we start, has anybody lost his or her glasses? Somebody handed in this pair of glasses with the microphone they gave them. So if anybody is missing a pair of glasses, they are here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for this opportunity to present a paper at this conference. I am really learning a lot, and I hope that you will also find my presentation valuable. Can I just ask, I have 15 minutes, it's just after 22, can I go on until, say, 4 o'clock? Is that all right? I'll try and finish before.
All right.
Okay. And then I would just like to point out that on the official program, the title of my presentation is listed as The South African State and Religions in South Africa. I have changed that slightly to read Religions in South Africa and the South African Constitution. I want to start with religions because I myself am a theologian, and with all the legal scholars here, I feel a bit like Saul, the Old Testament king among the prophets, rather lonely, but I hope that I can make a contribution to this very important theme of law and religion in Africa. Now, I want to start by just mentioning a few facts about South Africa, the peoples, our constitution and religion, and the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms. Now, let me say, if I speak about the facts about South Africa, that we are a country of pluralities, ethnic pluralities, cultural pluralities, and that is reflected in the fact that we have 11 official languages within the boundaries of the state of South Africa. We have many religions in South Africa, Christianity. It was said here by the previous speaker that about 80% of the population profess that they are Christians or are linked to the Christian religion. That does not necessarily mean that they are practicing religions, practicing Christians, but that is the one fact. Then we have the Jewish religion, the Muslim religion, the Hindu religion, the Buddhist religion, the Baha'i religion, many other religions, and also African indigenous churches, which would be part of Christianity, and then African traditional religion, about which Dr. Mdende spoke so passionately a few minutes ago. The Christianity is divided into many denominations: Anglican, Reformed, Methodist. There are many new charismatic movements. They are there, all of them, in South Africa. And then in 1994 and again in 1996, a final new constitution for South Africa was accepted. And in that constitution, for the first time, religious freedom became guaranteed. And it became the responsibility of the state to promote and to protect the different religions in South Africa. They had to promote and protect all the rights which are written into the Charter of Rights, Chapter 2 of our Constitution. That brought forward the question, but what is freedom of religion? And so we developed a South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedom, trying to spell out what is the content of freedom of religion. The fact that you can believe or not believe, that you can change your religion, that you have the right to freely express your religion, that the religions have the right to determine their own internal order, etc., etc., etc. If you are interested in that document, you can contact me and I will send it to you per email. I'll give my email address at the end. But that document, we hope it's underway to Parliament. We've had discussions with various bodies in the past year. Now we are going to meet with political parties and with committees of Parliament in trying to take that document eventually to Parliament, because the South African Constitution allows that additional charters of rights can be accepted by Parliament in order to enhance the democracy, as long as those charters are not in contradiction to the Charter of Rights, the second chapter of our Constitution. Now, if I say I want to talk about the religions, that's not quite right. I don't want to talk about all the religions in South Africa. That's not possible within 15 minutes. I would like to talk about two religions and make a few remarks about them, and that is Christianity and African traditional religion. Now, with regard to Christianity, the current situation with regard to Christianity is that in South Africa, the state law is made up of Western law, based on the Roman Dutch law and the English law, as it was developed in time and as found its place within the courts. So that is the one source of our law, is the state law in South Africa, and the other source is stated as customary law. But what about all the other religions? The state law, as the Western law and the customary law, that is the official state religion. But then there are all the other religions, Muslims, Hindus, the Jewish religion, all of them have their own systems of law and their own procedures of law. They are not officially recognized, although there are attempts to accommodate the Muslim law and the Jewish law and some of the other laws, and the Constitution provides for that in Article 15.3. But the interesting fact is that, for instance, in a handbook on legal pluralism in South Africa, you find that they discuss Hindu law, Jewish law, Muslim law, but they don't discuss Christianity, Christian laws in South Africa. And that raises the question, but why is that the situation? Why is it that in South Africa, where 80% of the population say that they belong to the Christian religion, why isn't it discussed as a legal system? There's a long story, I think, to that, ladies and gentlemen, and I think it comes from the Reformation of the 16th century, when the reformers did not go back and write a new reformed insight into the relations, about the relationship between church and state, they reverted to the Constantine position of the 3rd or the 4th century. And that position meant that the state, the authorities, protected the religion. They gave it a safe haven, the Christian religion, but they also controlled the religion. And they controlled it through their own policies and ways of doing things. And it is very interesting that this view came out of the Reformation of the 16th century as the reformed point of view on the relationship between church and state. And you find this so-called Constantine position within England, the king being the head of the church. You find it in the Netherlands, where the Dutch East Indian Company, with the Lords 17, they had complete control over the reformed religion within the various colonies to which the Dutch went. You find it in Germany, to which it was referred earlier today as a so-called quius religius, quius regio, eius religio. And that position, I mean, today the discussion in Europe is, mustn't we change this paradigm of what the so-called Christian position is on the relationship between church and state? But this position, ladies and gentlemen, was the prominent position in South Africa from 1652, when the Dutch came there. It was continued in 1806 when the English came. That continued until 1910, when we became a union of South Africa. And from then on, the different political parties with their policies, they protected the religion, but they also controlled the religion with their policies and their laws that they made. And then in 1996, a paradigm shift took place when that position was changed and we got freedom of religion. The result of that position, ladies and gentlemen, was that the policies of, or the laws that the different authorities made throughout the years, was seen as so-called Christian laws, carrying the values of the Western world. And I think that is just about what happened in all the colonies where these countries that I have mentioned, where they went. I want to go to a next slide. Excuse me, I've just got a message here that there's something wrong with the electricity supply. Let me go to the next slide. I hope it works. I want to come to African traditional religion and the South African constitution. Now, African traditional religion, we can ask the question what that is. I don't have the time to go into detail. I made an explanation in my paper in which I could make use of the work of Dr. Mdende, their seeing of God as the creator, the reverence that they have for ancestors, the role that rituals play in that religion. At the birth of a child, at the initiation of children, at the marriage, at the burial, in the life after, everywhere you have religion, you have rituals. And those rituals also play a role within the clan, the community. And there you have the position that in cases of drought or famine or whatever, that a special ritual can be called. And we had the very interesting thing that on the 29th of December, this past 2012, the president of South Africa President Jacob Zuma called for a cleansing ritual of all the inhabitants of South Africa, saying, amongst others, that the forefathers, the ancestors, are not satisfied with the situation in the country, with all the deaths on the roads, with the genocide that took place at Marikana, that platinum mine near Rustenburg, of which I'm sure you must have seen the video, the TV reports, where the police killed 45 people. And as a result of all of that, the president, within, I think, the structure of an elder or a leader within the African traditional religion, called for a cleansing ceremony for the whole of South Africa. But what is their position with regard to customary law? Now, when the during the Dutch customary law, they hardly took notice of it. They just went on with the practicing of the Dutch Roman law in South Africa. When the British came, they came into contact with African traditional believers and followers, and they started taking up some of the customary laws of African traditional religion into the laws of the land, and that was the so-called official customary law. But apart from that, there was a lot of customary law that was not taken up into the law of South Africa. And with a new constitution and the emphasis that is put on culture, is there a problem? I suppose this gives me a little bit more time.
So you just have five more minutes.
That's more than enough. Thank you. What happened is that they started allowing for African customary law as part of the official law of South Africa. But there are still some commentators who say that is always in a secondary position. It is always measured against Western values to determine how and what of these customary laws can be taken up into the laws of South Africa. But I think it is increasingly happening. A few weeks ago, there was a report in a newspaper in South Africa saying that the Labour Court, the Appeal Court for Labour Relations, accepted the reason of the forefathers as a valid reason to uphold or to reject an appeal that was made. The background is a lady who worked at an estate, Johanna Matlole, I think, I if I remember it correctly. Is that better? Okay. And she came to her employer and said, I've been going to a traditional healer for a long time because I want to qualify as a traditional healer. And I got my qualification, and now I'm asking for leave of 1 month to go to a Sangoma in order to be qualified as a Sangoma. And when the employer received this request, they refused it. Then one morning she turned up at work, and she gave them a letter from a traditional healer saying that this lady has been commanded by the ancestors to go on this course, and she will be absent for a month. And on that day, they fired her. She went to the Commission for Conciliation and Mediation, and they upheld her appeal, or her request. Upon that, the employer appealed against that. In the end, that ended up in the appeal court of labor, and the judges of that court said that she had the right to take that leave to go and attend that course to become a Sangoma. And the judge that read the outcome said, what we need in South Africa is a paradigm change. And now I'm coming to the end of my paper. Is this one still working?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Sorry. But, okay, let me just see. I say, in conclusion, what I think is necessary in South Africa is that we indeed need not necessarily a new paradigm change, but a further paradigm change. I think the first paradigm change was to allow freedom of religion. But what does this freedom of religion entail? What does it entail for all the religions in South Africa? I think we must think through that and work through it in order to come up with a legal order that in some way or the other can officially accommodate all the different legal systems that we have as a result of all the different cultures that we have in South Africa. The other thing, and that is my last remark, that what I think is necessary in South Africa is that we need that religions in South Africa, Christianity, Jewish religion, African traditional religion, all the religions must appropriate freedom of religion. We must avail ourselves of what is the content of freedom of religion, and then we must make it part of the religion that we are. I thank you for your attention, and thank you.